President Obama's announcement of the restoration of full diplomatic relations with Cuba will bring changes not seen in more than a half century. And today, White House spokesman Josh Earnest said he wouldn't rule out a U.S. visit from President Castro. Joining us to talk about the history of the U.S.-Cuba relationship is Julia Swieg. She's director for Latin American Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations and author of Cuba, What Everyone Needs to Know. Julia, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Jeremy.
And before we go further back, just put this in the context of the whole history of U.S.-Cuba relations. How big of a deal is what happened yesterday?
Yesterday's announcement by President Obama was by far the single largest historic step taken by any president since 1961, when John F. Kennedy first put the full embargo in place. This is a major historic moment. It will be part of the Obama Presidential Library. The exhibit about Obama restoring relations with Cuba will be highlighted as one of his major foreign policy legacies.
Okay, well, let's go back to the beginning to put this in context. The beginning of the U.S.-Cuba relationship, when did that start and under what circumstances?
Before we get to the middle of the 20th century, the key point about the 19th century is that Cuba had a war of independence against Spanish colonial rule. It started in the 1860s. It picked up again in the 1890s. And once Spain was defeated with the help of the United States came in as the new dominant colonial power in Cuba. And that lasted through the 1950s. That's when Guantanamo, the base there, came to be run by the United States. That's when the economic and the political and diplomatic depth of the relationship, some would use the word dominance by the United States of most decision-making in Cuba, really solidified in the first half of the 20th century.
And then in the second half of the 20th century, we get to 1959, a very important moment in U.S.-Cuba relations.
January 1st, 1959 is the day that Fidel Castro and his revolutionary movement, the 26th of July, take power. And the 1st of January begins the process of a radical overhaul of the relationship between the United States and Cuba. Cuba begins the process of extirpating the United States from its economic, political, and foreign policy decisions. It involves nationalizations. It involves the beginning of a quite deep relationship with the Soviet Union and the socialist bloc. It begins support for revolutions elsewhere in Latin America and in Africa. And the United States likewise begins a process that actually started even before Fidel took power of trying to prevent the Cuban Revolution from consolidating, from exporting itself, trying to overthrow and undermine Fidel Castro at every pass.
And that includes declaring an embargo on most exports to Cuba in October of 1960 and breaking diplomatic relations in January of 61.
That is correct. And then steadily imposing deeper and more aggressive economic sanctions against the island, and also preventing Americans not only from investing there, but from traveling there. And so this antipathy and standoff and hostility and disaffection deepens and really continues for this half century until now.
And when the U.S. broke off diplomatic relations with Cuba in January of 1961, this is right before President Kennedy took office, President Eisenhower's press secretary, James Hagerty, said this.
There is a limit to what the United States and self-respect can endure. That limit has now been reached. Our friendship for the Cuban people is not affected. It is my hope and my conviction that in the not-too-distant future, it will be possible for the historic friendship between us once again to find reflection in normal relations of every sort.
But that was not possible, Julia Swieg, in the years right after that. In 1962, things got much worse.
Yes, the much worse moment came in October of 62 with the Cuban Missile Crisis, when the United States discovered that the Soviets had put missiles with nuclear warheads on several bases around Cuba, and the nuclear standoff that actually almost did radically change the world did come to a brink, but was then resolved without a nuclear conflict.
Now, in 1977, President Carter tried to normalize relations with Cuba. Tell us about that.
Yes, the Carter Initiative was before this by President Obama, the most comprehensive effort to really put full-bore normalization on the table. So there were a series of secret talks between Cuban and American representatives. There was an effort, some initial steps taken, such as the opening of diplomatic representations in both capitals. There was a negotiation of an anti-hijacking agreement. And there was a negotiation that involved the release of several thousand political prisoners.
And that ended as soon as President Reagan came into office in 1981.
It started to end before Reagan was elected, when the Cuban government deployed about 20,000 troops to fight in southern Africa against the apartheid regime. And in Namibia, the sides hardened when it became clear that Cuba was more interested in its Africa adventure and didn't see Carter being able to fully deliver on the full normalization process.
And in the years that have come since the early 80s, we've had obviously a flood of refugees coming into the United States from Cuba. Cuban politics have become a big part of Florida politics, and Florida is such an important state in national politics in this country. But how did we get from there to where we are today?
Well, between the early 1980s and now, the Cuban American population has grown here in the United States, but it's also aged, and it's also begun to reproduce itself, so that the demographics of the population have shifted. The older generation, the most committed to the anti-Castro campaign and policy, is frankly just not what it once was. There really is no Cuban-American lobby in Washington, D.C. any longer. Instead, what you have, and this is in part because of steps Obama took in his first term, is the organic family and economic ties between South Florida and Cuba changing the politics. Cuba lifted its ban on travel of its own people, and so we have Cubans coming back and forth on those flights between Miami and Havana, sometimes just commuting to run their businesses. They have houses and bank accounts in both countries, and that's what's really shifted the political momentum, and we see it in recent votes in 2012 presidential election. We saw it in the Charlie Crist election. Even though he lost, he won the Cuban-American vote by 4%, and that included even some in the over 65 demographic.
So, Julia Zweig, with all of this in the past and leading us right up to the present, where do you see Cuba in 10 years with the changes that were announced yesterday?
10 years from now, I would have guessed that we will have full normal relations, no more travel ban. We'll have, you know, a kind of boring relationship even with Cuba, with people moving back and forth. We'll go to one another's universities. We'll have maybe co-production of movies. We'll have business ties. We'll have ties and more collaboration in science and medicine. You know, we'll have the kind of relationship that we have with Chile, another country that's sort of, you know, like, doesn't get much attention, but it's an important economic and cultural and diplomatic and political and social set of relations.
Julia Zweig, Director for Latin American Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations. She's author of Cuba, What Everyone Needs to Know. Julia, thanks so much.
Jeremy, a pleasure to be with you.